A wave of water. I want to be drenched with it. I want every drop of his sweat, his lust on every inch of my skin. I pull him toward me so he can crush me with his massive weight. He doesn't budge, though. He stands there, unfazed, still devouring my lips, immobile. His tongue thrusts in and licks me from the inside, the roof of my mouth, my tongue, my teeth. He is after my essence, the special taste that lives deep. He growls when he gets it, my flavor, and the pressure of his grip on my hair increases tenfold. It's painful, but not enough to tamp down my arousal. I give up my attempts to bring him to me. Rather, I go to him. I lift my leg and wrap it around his waist. My hands creep up and lock around his neck. I climb him like an ivy, toxic and poisonous and shameless. I press my body to his and kiss him back with everything I am. I pour my soul into it. For these few moments, I become a balm to his pain. But it doesn't last long. My selfishness and my need for him take over. My core starts leaking, and it becomes hard to remember I'm only meant to give, not to take. I rotate my hips, searching for that magical friction against the ridged planes of his body. Then I feel it. His erection against my upper tummy. It's huge, hard, a heated rod. It's alive. And when I move against it, I feel it throb. A tortured moan rips out of his chest. Thomas tears his mouth away from me, and even my soul mourns the loss. We stare at each other, gasping for breath. I'm still clung around him, and his cock is still nestled between our aroused bodies. I adjust my thigh around his hip, and it throbs with the small movement.
"Don't fucking move,"
he tells me, emphasizing it with a tug on my hair. "Okay," I swallow. "I'm sorry." A pained chuckle.
"For what?"
"I made you kiss me." The legendary tick makes its appearance at the heel of my words. It drums on his jaw like a secondary heart, or maybe a time bomb.
"You did, didn't you?"
Unable to talk, I simply nod. In answer, he lodges his thigh between my legs and presses on my core. It's an electric shock multiplied by a strike of lightning, and I almost burst into flames. What? I try to speak, but he increases the pressure, eliciting a moan from me.
"Why?"
he whispers, noting my lusty reactions.
"Why did you make me do it, Layla?"
"Because I..." Again, he repeats his movements, reducing me to wordless, needy moans. What is he doing?
"Because you what?"
"Because I do this kind of thing. I'm selfish and bad." I moan, doused in shame and arousal. "I take what I want because I can't control myself. I don't want to."
"And you want me, don't you?"
When I don't answer, he tugs on my hair sharply.
"You want me, Layla?"
It's not a question, but I still nod my head. Yes, I want him. I've wanted him since the first time I saw him. I want him more and more with each passing day. I want him because he's like me. He's an unrequited love, and I want to save him somehow. His eyes shine with satisfaction, a sense of victory at my answer. He loves my desperation, and it makes me hornier. "We're so fucked," my omniscient heart says. I agree.
"I can do whatever I want with you and you'll let me. Isn't that right, Layla?"
He licks his lips as if savoring his own words.
"I can tell you to jump and you'll ask how high. I can tell you to strip and you'll strip as if your clothes are on fire.
Yes, I moan. He rewards me by grinding his muscular thigh and my cunt pulses. My lust-addled brain commands me to move, to chase the friction, and I do it. I slide up and down his maddening leg, digging my nails into his scalp as the pleasure mounts. I feel the angry and rhythmic jerk of his cock on my stomach, and I love it. I love the fact that I've shed all my inhibitions and am reduced to this, a lust-drunk puppet. I love that it gives Thomas pleasure. He isn't sad anymore, or vulnerable. Yes, I love all that. His pain has become my pain, and it's going to make me come on his leg. I watch Thomas with hazy eyes. I watch the arrogant slope of his flushed cheeks. I watch his dilated pupils, his wet, parted lips. All the while I'm moving, humping his leg, up and down, up and down.
Of course you will, he rasps. Will you come for me, Layla?
I jerk out a nod. In the back of my mind, I know how wrong this is, how shameful, but I can't stop myself. As Thomas said, I'll do anything for him in this moment. My movements are haphazard now, jerky, epileptic. I want it so bad. I want my cum to gush so hard it seeps through my panties and leaves a wet patch on his jeans. The graphic, vulgar thought pushes me over the edge. Hard and moaning, I come. Just the way I wanted. No, just the way he wanted. I was simply following his orders. My mind is filled with cotton and shooting stars and static. I want to bask in it forever. Oh God, it's so good. So good. The pressure on my body eases. I don't feel his muscles between my legs, and the harsh grip on my hair has vanished. In the wake of my orgasm, Thomas has let me go, and in turn forced me to unwind my body from his. I'm still recovering from my climax, leaning against the wall for balance, but I try to focus. Thomas is watching me, intensely, his flaming eyes working double time to take me in, his hands on either side of my head.
Do you understand what I'm telling you, Layla? Can you hear your heart beating? Is it trying to pound through your chest? Do you think you can control it? Tell it to calm down? Your hips are still shaking. I bet you're still leaking cum, aren't you? Do you think you can control any of that?
I shake my head.
Yeah, that's right. You'd be surprised to know how many things aren't your fault at all.
His eyes bore into mine, as if telling me the importance of his declaration. For a second, I can't make the connection between what he's telling me and what's happened here. But then I get it. He's absolving me. He's rendering me blameless for kissing him, for making him kiss me. I wonder if this absolution includes what happened with Caleb. Am I free of those sins too? My heart scoffs. Are you kidding? We tricked him into having sex. I saw you, I blurt out without thinking. As soon as the words are out of my mouth, I know in my bones that this will destroy whatever kindness he's harboring toward me. Through the window, I add, because I can't handle not being blamed. Everything is always my fault. The broken vases at home, muddy footprints on the tile floors, the missing bottles of liquor from the cabinet, Caleb's missing underwear. The fact that he ran off to college a month early and won't even visit home. The fact that I shoplifted, drank and drove numerous times, crashed parties, broke my mom's ice sculpture. It's all my fault. It's just like me to do those things. I want Thomas's accusation too. I saw how lonely you were. I saw the anger on your face the way you paced around the room like you were trapped. The scene plays in my head. His frantic steps. his hands tugging at his hair. Then the scene changes and I'm outside his bedroom window. And then you were with her. Hadley, you were talking and you looked so sad and angry and then she left. I kept watching your back and your shoulders. They were so tight and I could see the effort it took you to keep yourself together. Then you picked up a vase and I thought you'd throw it against the wall, break it because I know your heart was breaking, but you held on to it. You set it down gently. You were better than me. I could never have done that. Nothing moves on his body. I don't know if he's breathing, if he's even seeing me. Thomas, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to see it. Then he shifts on his feet, and the overhead light slashes his face into two halves of shadow and light. He appears beastly, like an animal with bright eyes and hard face. For the first time since I began my confession, I feel a tinge of true fear. I can see he wants to do something, maybe harm me physically. His body is taut with violence. He looks bigger, enlarged with the barely least control. For a second, I think he does lose control. His hands jerk and ball into fists, but then he takes a shallow, choppy breath.
Stay the fuck away from me,
he says softly, deadly. With that, he marches out of the storage room.
Chapter 13. The Bard. My father was a man in love. He's been dead for 10 years now, and the only thing I can say for sure about him is that he was in love with my mother. I never knew my mother. I never heard her voice, never touched her. She died the day I was born. I have seen pictures of her, of course. I have seen her smile, her warm blue eyes that resemble mine. She was a beautiful woman with dark brown hair and a wide smile. Other than that, my knowledge about her is fairly limited. I don't know what kind of woman would inspire such devotion from a man who never understood how to love his own son. Whatever I know about her came from my father's poems, which I didn't know existed until I was old enough to understand that my dad was unlike other dads. He was busy. He was silent. A hunched, unkempt man who stumbled more than he walked. My father was a poet. His desk was always covered by a mountain of papers. Many of them had trails of blue ink webbed across them, as if words had dissolved and run down. He wrote and wrote, but never published anything. That's because he wasn't writing for anyone else but himself. He was resurrecting his dead wife through his words. He wrote about her and only her, and most of his poems were unfinished and rough. They were ramblings about silk-spun hair, a blue-green scarf, a mole on her shoulder, peanut butter cookies. And I realized this was love. Brutal, dark, and never-ending. It's madness. When I left this town, I knew I'd never come back. All I've ever known here is loneliness and a role model who wouldn't even look at me. This town isn't my home. My father wasn't my father, even though he gave me the gift of poetry, or maybe the burden of it. I am where I am because of it. If I hadn't found the magic of words, maybe my life would be different right now. But tonight, the kind of madness that has gripped me is different. It has nothing to do with love and everything to do with a violet-eyed girl who refuses to leave my thoughts. My fingers splay wide on the tiled wall as the cold water sluices down my body. The air around me is chilly and abrasive, but my body remembers Layla's heat. I shift on my feet and a current zaps through me as my cock touches the cold tile. It's hard and swollen and angry. It's wild like me, like the things inside me, things that feel both novel and primitive, as if they've been in hiding, programmed in my genes, and I'm only discovering them now. The absolute need to possess someone, to be the air they breathe and the universe they live in. I feel both powerful and powerless at once. My eyes scrunch closed, and all I see is her, wrapped around my body, moving, bucking. Like she'd die if she didn't touch me, like she'd lose her mind. My arousal spikes up, and like a reel I can't stop from rolling, I see Layla behind my closed eyelids. But it isn't her face or blush-stained cheeks that I see. It's her spirit. It's the fact that she stood up in a class full of people and read her shitty poem out loud. It's the fact that she had the courage to expose her ugliness to me, to cry in front of me, to be vulnerable. It's the fact that she threw herself at me, knowing I might reject her. Could I be that vital to someone? It makes me want to hold her close even as I want to push her away. How dare she spy on me? How dare she make judgments about my life? What does she know about it anyway? I shouldn't have followed her. I shouldn't have lost control and kissed her back. I've been good at ignoring her all week. But she licked me. In a classroom, in broad daylight. Who does something so crazy, so fucking erotic? A sound brings me out of my thoughts. It's a soft thud of footsteps. I know it's her. I'd recognize those light, airy footsteps anywhere. But how do I face Hadley now? How do I tell her about yet another mistake I made when I promised to put her first? Like a coward, I want to hide out in here. But we have a pull that's magnetic. If she's around, I can't be far away from her. It's a fucked up kind of physics. I shut off the water, dry off, and with the towel wrapped around my waist, come out of the guest bathroom. As I walk down the hallway, I rush through 100 different scenarios for how to tell her, whether to tell her or not. I cringe at the idea of hiding this, though I'm left wondering why that is. Is it because I want to be honest with my wife, or is it because that kiss meant more than a slip of judgment and deserves acknowledgement? Before I can dissect this absurd thought, I see her. Hadley is at the front door with a small bag in her hand. At the sight of her, I'm back in this world, in my reality. It makes Layla feel like a creature from a distant, alternate universe. Hadley? I say her name in a questioning tone, though I know the answer to my unspoken question. I've never felt a complete shutdown. I've never had my breath suspended or my heart skip a beat. People talk about it, the symptoms of falling in love, but this isn't love. This awful feeling, it's pure, unadulterated fear. It occupies every corner of my body. Hadley is leaving me. For good. She turns and her face is wary but blank, somehow. Her posture is both delicate and firm. I'm going to Beth's. It takes me a second to hear her with the absolute silence pervading my body. What? I'll be back Wednesday. You'll be back? The frown that drew me to her for the very first time makes an appearance. Strangely, I don't have the urge to ease it off her forehead. I need some time to myself, she says. Her soft voice screeches at my skin, like claws dragging across my body. What about Nikki? I've asked this before. We've had this conversation before. The night Layla saw me through the window was the night Hadley and I argued about this very thing. I wanted her to stay, and she wanted to take off for a few days. Hadley shakes her head. He doesn't need me. What about me? I need you. Are you saying your son doesn't need you? She swallows as an odd look enters her eyes. He has you, and Susan can stay here for a few days. I just need to get away. From what, exactly? What do you want to get away from? I don't want to argue, Thomas. I want to go. Is that why you're sneaking out at night? Because you didn't want to argue? I don't give her a chance to talk. Guess what? You can't escape the argument. You can't fucking escape me. I know I should control myself. I should. It's not her fault she wants to get away. It's me. I'm the one who ruined everything. But damn it, can't she see how much I love her? How her leaving would fucking destroy me? And if she loves me, how can she do this to me? She doesn't love you. Thomas, I take a step forward. What is it that I'm doing wrong? Tell me. What do you want from me? What do I need to do to get you to stay? Because I'll do anything. I reach her, and before I can talk myself out of it, I grab her bicep. She flinches at my touch, and my gut burns with anger and resentment and fear. She can't leave me. She can't. I can't be alone. I've been a fucking asshole to you in the past, but I've changed. Tell me what you want from me, and I'll give it to you in a heartbeat. Just don't leave. My words are right, I know it, but my voice is all wrong. The emotions inside me are wrong. Everything about this feels wrong. The darkness, the silence, the fact that I'm wearing a towel, begging my wife to stay. The fact that she's still unmoved. The look in her eyes is that of being trapped. Hadley feels trapped with me.
"I want you to let go," she whispers.
My frightened fingers grip her even tighter. "No. No, I won't. I'm going to fight for us. I'm going to keep my promise because I love you." I say it like an accusation. It lashes out of my mouth as an attempt to make her understand, make her stay.
"I don't want you to. Just let me go,"
she says again, and this time her plea holds all the power in the world. My fingers loosen and then drop to my side, limp and useless. She's leaving me. She's leaving me. A burn makes a home in my eyes and I swallow thickly. Hadley notices it, raises her hand and caresses my cheek. I shudder and latch onto it, as though I could physically keep her here.
"I don't want to hurt you," she says with flickers of emotions in her voice.
"Then don't go," I whisper raggedly.
"I need you."
She shakes her head with sadness.
"I just need a little bit of time. Please."
I gave up everything for her. Everything that mattered to me is gone. I kept my end of the bargain. I put her first. So why can't she do the same? Why can't she love me back? My bigger hand clenches around her smaller one. For a brief moment, I want to keep going, keep squeezing until I crush her tiny fingers. Maybe that physical pain will tell her how I'm burning inside. Maybe then she'll stay. But I let go and step back. "How are you planning on getting there?" I ask with a ticking jaw. She studies my face silently. I show her all of my anger, my pain. I hope she sees the devastation she's going to leave in her wake. I hope she sees this in her nightmares, like I'll see her indifference in mine.
"I called a cab. It's outside," she tells me.
"Give me a second to put on some clothes. I'll walk with you."
"You don't have to."
I shoot her a look and she quiets down. If she wants to leave, I'll escort her out myself. A few minutes later, we're standing at the door of the cab. Hadley puts her bag inside and then slides in herself. Without looking at her, I shut the door and tap on the roof, alerting the cabbie to pull out. I feel Hadley watching me through the window, but I don't return her look. I simply turn around and walk to the house. The pile of bricks I want to take apart with my own bare hands. Last time Hadley left, it took me 2 days to notice she was gone. I'm not proud of it. In fact, I'm downright ashamed that I never noticed her absence. My sole focus was the collection of poems I was working on. I had a deadline, and I didn't see anything beyond that. I can't remember if I ate or even moved from my desk, although, of course, I must have. I can't remember anything of those frenzied 48 hours until the knock that came at my office, jarring me awake from my dreamy, fugue-like state. After that, I remember everything clearly. I remember Hadley entering the room. I remember wondering about how clean everything looked, despite the fact that I practically lived in there for hours on end. The trash was in the trash can. The papers were organized on the desk. I felt a momentary happiness, a momentary pride at how different I was from what I've known, from my father. I was a real poet. I had published poems, won awards, and I was organized and neat. As I looked at Hadley, I remember thinking I had a family. It was a moment of sheer arrogance for myself and pity for the man who'd failed in every aspect of his life. It was a moment of sheer anger at him. But with Hadley's next words, my world cracked and then crumbled. She told me she wanted a divorce, and like a fucking moron, I stilled, became speechless. She told me she'd been gone for the past 2 days. She'd needed the time to think. She said our love had died and it was better to part ways, that it was no one's fault. It was just something that happened. We're in awe of each other, Thomas. We admire each other, but we don't love. What the fuck did that mean? Of course I was in fucking awe of her. She was my wife. The jingle of keys followed by the click of the door brings me out of my memories and tells me Susan has arrived. It's morning now. Hadley has been gone for a few hours, but it feels like years. Susan sets her bag down on the coffee table and pads over to where I'm sitting on the floor in front of Nikki. My son sits on the carpet, his toys strewn about. His favorites change every week.
At the moment, it's the elephant I bought a few days ago.
He's up early.
She sits beside me and coos at Nikki. He gurgles at her. With his red cheeks and messy hair, he appears impish. I wonder if he feels the change in the air. Does he feel the absence of his mom? I want to pick him up and hug him, tell him I'll always love him no matter what. Just don't leave me.
Thomas?
Susan puts her hand on my shoulder. Yeah, he was sort of fussy. I should have tried to put him back to sleep, but I just didn't. I guess I wanted to play with him.
It's okay. He'll be a little cranky, but nothing I can't handle.
She smiles. There was a time when Susan knew me the best. She was my nanny, too, when I was growing up, and I think her motherly understanding is still intact. She studies me, my face, my posture, and I want to hide myself, or maybe break down and tell her everything, like a child does to his mother, hoping she'll solve all the problems. At least, that's what I imagine a mother feels like.
Are you okay, Thomas? What's going on?
Her concern touches a deep part of me. It soothes me to see that she cares. But even so, her sympathy is grating. It further proves that I fucked everything up. Everything's fine. I reply curtly as I stand up. Would it be possible for you to stay here full-time for a couple of days? I'll pay you, of course. She frowns.
Of course I'll stay, but why?
I can see that she probably knows why, and I hate that. I hate that she knows there's something wrong in this house, in my family. I've never known one. I've never wanted one, but now I can't seem to let go of it. I'll need you to start today. Let me know when you're ready and I'll drive you to get your stuff. I walk away then, but Susan catches up with me at the bottom of the stairs.
Thomas, get back here.
It's her stern tone, one she has used on me countless times when I was a kid. Thomas, walk slowly. Thomas, don't disturb your father. Thomas, your father is busy. I stop, but don't turn around. I hear her footsteps approaching.
What's going on, Thomas?
At my silence, she puts her hand on my back, and I tense at her soft touch.
Is it Hadley?
At the mention of her name, a weird sense of possessiveness rises in me. I can't explain it, but I don't want Susan to be talking about her, knowing she left me. Knowing she left her 7-month-old son. As if Nikki knows I'm thinking about him, a sharp giggle echoes in the air. Let me know when you're ready to go, I insist, taking a step away from her, about to climb up the stairs and do something. Anything. Words are coming to me, begging me to make something of them, but I won't. I hate them.
She left, didn't she?
She says, effectively stopping me in my tracks. Her long sigh makes me turn around. It's an unsurprised sound. It's a sound that says it was expected. My anger is about to burst now. I feel hot, hotter than I've ever felt. Do you have something to say? My voice is calm and soft, unlike the jagged, furious edges inside me.
Thomas,
She sighs, her hands ringing in front of her.
I know it's hard to hear, but I think there's something wrong with Hadley. I think she's going through something big, and she needs help, Thomas. She might be suffering from baby blues or something similar. I read up on it the other day. It's very common in women. They don't show interest in their children. They are depressed.
She reaches out and clutches my bicep.
It fits the bill. I think Hadley should see a psychiatrist.
My wife is not crazy, I say with gritted teeth.
No, of course not. I'm not saying she is, but she needs medical help. I have seen her, Thomas. Nothing about her indifference feels right.
We're not talking about this. We need to talk about this. We need to do something.
Do you know where she went? We need to find her.
I should have said something sooner. We don't need to do anything. And Hadley hasn't left. She's just gone for a few days. She just needed a break. She'll be back Wednesday. As I say it, I realize how hollow it all sounds. Do I really believe she'll be back?
A break from what? You don't leave your baby to fend for himself like that.
You do when you never wanted that baby. The declaration thuds like a landslide. It crashes against the air and boomerangs, hitting me in the chest. I know the reason why Hadley can't bring herself to care about Nikki. I know I'm responsible for it. What are you talking about? Susan asks, frowning. She wanted to get an abortion, but I convinced her not to. I plow my hands through my hair and finally break down and tell her. She'd found out she was pregnant, so she went away for a couple of days, but I didn't even notice she was gone. I was too busy writing my next fucking masterpiece. When she got back, she told me she wanted a divorce. She wasn't even going to tell me about the baby. She didn't want him, said it wasn't the right time for a baby because we hardly loved each other. Things would get messy, she said. She didn't think she could raise a child alone because I was too wrapped up in my own shit. A bark of a laugh escapes me, and with an aching throat I confess. I'm like my father, Susan. I feel dizzy and I grab the railing to keep myself upright. If it wasn't for that discarded pregnancy test, I never would have known I was going to be a father. She would have killed my baby because I fucked up. I can't describe the anger I felt then. I wanted to kill her, kill myself for not loving her right. But all I did was beg and beg until she gave in and decided to try again. My gaze swings over to Nikki, who's still playing on the carpet. His coos and gurgles cut me as sharp as a knife. Somehow, I've failed again. She's gone, and Nikki is left motherless. Susan puts her hands on my tight cheeks. Thomas, you're not like your father. He loved you and your mother, but he didn't know how to show it. You do know. You know how to put your child first. You know how to be there for Hadley. She squeezes my arm. Do you hear me? You're not like your father. Then why is she gone? I whisper. Susan understands and steps forward to hug me. I deflate within her motherly warmth like a fucking child. I hate it. I hate being this weak, being such a failure, but I don't have the strength to step out of her embrace yet. After a while, Susan leaves to get Nikki something to eat. He is playing with Layla's purple Russian hat, chewing on the fur, drooling. It triggers the memories of last night, and before I know it, I'm thrown into another dimension. I'm flooded with Layla. I haven't thought of her or the kiss since Hadley left, but now it's all I can think about. A hunger rises in me, a wrong, dirty, angry kind of hunger. It just wants to take and take and take, because I'm tired of feeling like this, like I have no control over my life. I'm ravenous for Layla. I'm ravenous for the power she gives me. I want to abuse that power, unleash it, use it against her. I want to destroy her like I'm destroyed in this moment. She is too brave for her own good. I want to destroy that bravery, that pure courage. Maybe Susan is right. Maybe I'm not like my father. My father never thought about anything else besides his wife, and the sudden burning in my bones, the volcanic eruption in my gut, has nothing to do with Hadley. It has everything to do with Layla Robinson.
Part 3. The Harlot. Chapter 14. Emma is with Dylan at the dorms, and the school is closed due to the snowstorm. I am home alone and restless. Normally, I wouldn't care about being stranded alone. But over the past month, I've forgotten how to live that way. Emma has spoiled me and now she's gone. I hate her. And I hate Dylan. And I hate the fucking snow. I hate everyone and everything. I'm sitting on the couch. My body feels tight and awkward, like it doesn't know what to do with itself. I try to remember what I normally do when alone. There's a half-eaten packet of Twizzlers on the coffee table, and I begin stuffing my face with it. Okay, what else? Aha! I shout to the empty room, then scroll through the music on my phone and put on something by Lana Del Rey. Blue Jeans. The song reminds me of Thomas. No surprise there. I curl up on the couch and make myself miserable listening to it. Flashes of storage closet bombard me as the song progresses. The kiss. The orgasm. My confession. The devastation when he left. I brought it on myself. I never should have kissed him in the first place. I never should have come apart on his leg. It was wrong on so many levels. Even though he seemed to enjoy my moans in desperation. The song stops and a shrill ring echoes in my apartment. I have half a mind to ignore it. but my fingers clumsily hit accept before I can see who it is. It's Caleb, and I'm staring down as the seconds pass on the screen. Slowly, I bring it to my ear and stammer. Hello? I should have prepared myself for the sharp intake of breath on the other side at the sound of my voice. There's a rattle in my chest. I feel my ribs shaking as my heart tries to squeeze out of my chest and latch onto the phone. Hello? I say, when I don't hear anything else. Hey, he says with a world of hesitation. I wasn't expecting you to pick up. I let his voice, a little scratchy, a lot boyish, wash over me. It's been 2 years. 2 years since I've heard it, since he's spoken to me. I pinch myself and curse at the sting. Lay, you there? What was that? It's hard to speak against the tidal wave of emotions rolling through my throat to my mouth. I just kind of pinched myself. I'm okay, though. A shy chuckle. Okay, good to know. He clears his throat. I hope I'm not interrupting anything, but in my defense, I was hoping you wouldn't pick up. No, you're not interrupting anything. I look around the empty apartment. It's a snow day, so I'm pretty much free. Ah, yes. I bet it's coming down hard over there. I hope it stays that way. I know how much you love unexpected holidays. Not anymore, I want to say. Now I hate them. I hate being trapped inside the apartment. I hate not being in Thomas's class. Caleb doesn't know me. He has no idea what's going on in my life. I derive a certain satisfaction from that. Yeah, I say instead, and leave it at that. We fall silent. I listen to his breaths, they're more like sighs. And I feel like a bitch. I ruined everything between us. Me. What I did was a felony. No apology would make up for it. Even though I called and called, he never picked up. I shake my head and break the silence. So, how's Boston?
Good, I hope. I'm back in New York.
Yes, for the party. I lick my lips. Did you bring me anything?
I actually...
Relax, I'm kidding. I throw out an awkward laugh. Wow. Boston sucked all the humor out of you, didn't it? He laughs and I picture his dirty blonde hair and green eyes. I picture his smooth fingers gripping his cell phone. Is it an iPhone? While he talks to me. Where are you staying? I want to complete the picture, see what he sees. My hungry heart wants more information.
At your mom's. In fact, I'm staying in your room.
No way. I sit up.
Why?
They've got enough rooms. My room is messy.
Lay, you don't still live here. They cleaned up after you.
Oh, right. I fall back and prop my legs on the coffee table. Sorry, I panicked.
What for? I've seen your room before. I know you're a slob.
Hey, I'm not a slob. I'm just a little disorganized.
No, you're a slob. You lost your phone in your room for 2 whole days because of your supposed disorganization.
Well, excuse me for acting my age. Not everyone is as perfect as you, wiping off water rings. I shudder. This time our silence is much lighter. I take the time to complete the picture. Caleb is in my room right now. It's hard to imagine my room clean, but still I see him sitting on my bed, propped against the white headboard. Maybe even staring out the left window overlooking Central Park. This time of year, the trees must be bare. And today, they must be covered in freshly falling snow.
So I've been calling because I wanted to see if you were still coming to Henry's party, Caleb says after a while.
That's why he's been calling? He wants to see me. I press my palm to my stomach, trying to squash the onslaught of butterflies. The fluttering of their soft wings. It's been a long time since I've felt that. Did I imagine it wrong, or have the sensations always been so light with dulled edges? It's nothing like the sharp tug of my belly button, or the firecrackers over my skin, or the urge to smash my thighs together and grind my hips. I can't. It comes out agonized. Pain. I've got some stuff to do at school. I already told Mom. Oh. He is disappointed. I can hear it in his voice. Well, maybe I'll see you some other time then. Are you planning on sticking around?
I think so, yes. The company needs me. I mean, I've been groomed for it forever, you know. I think it's time.
Sure. Yeah, the company. Well, I'm glad you're going to be around.
Me too,
he says with a quiet voice. It's the end of our conversation. It's time to put down the phone. But nothing feels resolved. What was the point of the call? Somehow I know it's not the usual check-in about the party. Why did you leave me? Did I just say that? I did, didn't I? I'm such a fucking moron. You never even said goodbye. Were you that mad at me? I hear the rush of air as he prepares to say something, but I don't let him. I mean, I know you were. Why wouldn't you be after what I did? But I thought, I don't know. I thought we could maybe fix it, or if not that, then maybe you'd give me a chance to apologize. But you never even answered my calls. You never came around. You know, Mom was devastated that first Christmas when you wouldn't come home. I know I'm rambling, but I can't stop the word vomit. It falls out of my lips, rolling down my tongue. She was completely depressed. She didn't even throw a party, and she always throws parties at holidays. Henry was so worried about her. He was like, you know your mom well, what's happening to her? I told him I didn't know, but I did know. She was missing you. I sigh. You know, I never feel bad for the things I put her through. She's not the mother of the year, as you know better than anyone. But I felt bad then. I felt like I broke up our family. You never even shouted at me or told me you hated me. I mean, I don't want to hear that, but silence is way worse. I press the heel of my palm to the center of my forehead. I'm sorry for lying, for taking advantage of you, for everything.
Lay, stop, okay? Please, just stop.
He whispers in a guttural voice. And I know he has tears in his eyes. They jab behind my closed eyelids as if in answer to his pain.
You don't have to say sorry. It wasn't your fault.
I'm hit with a tiny deja vu.
You'd be surprised to know how many things aren't your fault at all.
Thomas's voice, even in my imagination, makes me shiver.
Lay?
Yeah, I'm here. I gather my thoughts. Caleb, it was my fault. I knew you were drunk and that cigarette I gave you, that was pot. I knew you weren't interested in me, but still I forced you to...
God, is that what you think? Is that what you think happened? You forced me?
A sharp gust of air, and I can almost hear him cracking his knuckles like he does when he's agitated.
Layla, I knew it was pot. I knew what I was doing. I wanted it to happen, okay?
You wanted to have sex with me?
Yes.
Why?
Because I wanted to know what it would feel like.
You mean having sex? You hadn't had sex before? You were a virgin too? See, this is the kind of thing you should know about your sexual partner. I'd always assumed Caleb was more experienced. Though it's true that I never saw him with a girl. He was one of those guys who spent time reading, doing homework, sometimes hanging with friends. But I thought he'd done it. I'd heard rumors about it. I never had the courage to ask, only the courage to throw baseless tantrums. Yeah, I fought with him over a stupid thing because I heard he'd slept with someone. I even broke his lamp and spilled water on his biology homework. Boy, that was a big fight.
No, I wasn't.
You weren't a virgin?
No, Layla, I wasn't.
But you just said you wanted to see what sex would feel like.
You know what? This isn't the way I pictured having this conversation.
I was hoping you'd come to the party and we'd talk. I've missed you, Lei. I've missed you so much, and I've got so many things I want to tell you, and I'm tired of not talking to you. Are you sure you can't make it? I mean, it's a Saturday. Tell me what you meant. I'm sitting on the edge of my seat, my legs bouncing on the floor, impatient. Don't do this, Lei. I don't want to do this over the phone. We're going to have to unless you want to drive up in the snow. Please, Lei, just... What did you mean, Caleb? You know I'm not going to let this go. I'll keep calling you and drive you crazy until you tell me. This time, his sigh is resigned. I wanted to see how sex would feel like... with a girl. I remain silent at his declaration. Things seem even more tangled now. I'm gay, Layla. No, you're not, I blurt out. I am. No, you're not. You slept with me. I'm repeating myself and my voice is high, but I can't seem to wrap my head around what he's saying. I thought, no, I knew that if I was going to fall in love with a girl, it would be you, Lei. You were everything to me. My best friend, my go-to person. I knew you were in love with me, and I thought if I could just push all those weird feelings away, I'd fall for you. I thought if I just touched you, I could maybe fall in love. But you didn't. No, he whispers. So it failed, your experiment? I mutter, talking to myself. It was an experiment for you. Sleeping with me. No, God, no, Layla, it wasn't an experiment. I could never do that to you, I... And you left. My voice seems dead to me. Flat. Without any inflection. You left me in that strange bed. With people I didn't know. By the time I got back home, you'd already gone. You know, when I was lying there in that bed... For a second I thought you'd gone out to get me coffee or something like in the movies. I thought you were falling in love with me. I thought things were going to be perfect. Layla, I'm... Don't. Don't say it. But I think I'm going to hang up now. My entire body sags as I end the call. The phone slides out of my limp fingers and falls on the ground with a clatter. I sit on the couch in a daze. It's hard to focus. When the buzzing is loud in my chest, my ears, my stomach, even my arms. Caleb can't be gay. I love him. Loved him. Whatever. I pictured our wedding. Our honeymoon in Paris, our babies. One violet-eyed boy and a green-eyed girl. I pictured him making love to me countless times. Even though our first time was a fucking disaster, I knew we'd improve with age, like wine or some kind of alcohol I can't think of right now. How can he be gay? I hear a crash then, in the distance. Or maybe it's inside me. I spring to my feet, but I can't stand still. I keep changing legs as if prepping myself to run. Somewhere. Anywhere. In the snap of a moment, I dash to my room. I'm dragging clothes over me, tights over my sleep shorts, leg warmers, a fuzzy white sweater over my camisole, my purple fur coat, a hat, my boots, gloves, three pairs of socks under my snow boots, and I'm out the door. A snowstorm is easier to battle with than my empty apartment. Chapter 15. He stole my notebook. The notebook I write my poems in. The notebook I had with me on prom night. That asshole. How do I know it's him? Because I'm not an idiot. I've looked fucking everywhere at home. I had to clean my apartment twice to get into all the corners. I've got blisters on my palms to prove it. My knees are chafed from kneeling and fishing out clothes hiding under my bed. I still didn't find my tiny blue spiral-bound notebook. After my sojourn in the snow yesterday, I started thinking rationally. The pain and the sting of the cold cleared my head.
Caleb is gay. The guy I've been in love with all my life is gay, and I never noticed it. Never. Not once. I've been so absorbed in my fantasies that I never bothered to come out of them. How selfish and stupid and unobservant do you have to be not to notice that your best friend is gay? I grew up with the guy, for God's sake. How did I not know this? I sat at my bench, the bench where I saw Thomas for the first time, and pondered, and cried, and pondered some more. It was an awful cycle, until I thought I'd die of the cold weather. So I trekked back, and by the time I reached home, I was itching to read or write or both. And since then, I haven't been able to sit still, because my notebook is missing. Missing! I know it was Thomas. He stole it when we were in the storage closet. It has to be him. I know I didn't simply misplace it, and he's the only human being I've come in contact with in the last 3 days. Since it's Tuesday, our poetry class isn't meeting. Even so, classes are back on, so I walk to the labyrinth. He must be there. He has other classes, after all. I need my notebook back. I need that stupid poem back. I remember every single word of it, and I just hope he isn't able to figure out it's about him. I don't want him to insult it like he did my last poem. As I reach his door and stare at the poet-in-residence sign, I realize how stupid it is to think he doesn't know. Of course he knows I wrote it for him. He knows everything about me. I try the knob, feel it turn, and suddenly I'm standing in front of him. Thomas is at his desk, but he looks up as I enter. He doesn't appear surprised to see me here, as if he knew I'd come. This makes me even more sure he's the thief. Without looking away, he puts his pen down and sits back in the high-backed leather chair. It creaks slightly. The sound oddly feels illicit, like breathy pants behind closed doors, or a loud rustle caused by hasty shedding of clothes in the dark. Should I feel shy around him now? Should I want to look away from his beautiful eyes now that he knows I'm a crazy stalker who comes on people's legs? Because honest to God, I don't feel any of those things. I feel famished. My skin thrums. It's more than awareness. It's like he's in me. A part of him is breathing inside my body. I step in and close the door behind me with a click. The hood covering my head falls, swishing down my loose curls. These inconsequential sounds feel even more illicit than the creak of the chair. Something out of 1,000 imaginations I've had.
"So, apparently you don't even knock," he murmurs.
Shit. I was just checking to see if the knob would turn. I lick my lips. And it did.
"And it did," he repeats.
My hands are at my back, gripping the very knob. "I'm sorry" is on the tip of my tongue, but I know it won't do any good. Somehow I know that if Thomas is angry, no matter what I do, he won't budge. Should have thought of that before I confessed all my crimes to him. "You have my notebook." My words waver. Thomas shifts in his chair, causing it to creak again, causing my thighs to quiver against each other.
"Your notebook."
"Yes." I wanted to make it a statement, but my voice betrays me and comes out squeaky at the end, turning it into an unsure question.
"I'm in possession of it, yes."
My hands fall away from the knob. "Huh. That was easy. Are you saying you have it?" A stupid question. He rubs his lips with his index finger.
"Is there any other way of saying it?"
There's a tiny spark in his eyes. If I hadn't spent copious amounts of time studying those twin flames and cataloging them, I would have missed it.
"Wow. So you did steal it from me,"
I murmur to myself.
"If by stealing you mean the way you stole the book from my office, then yes, I did steal it. The mention of the book conjures up the image of it sitting on my nightstand. I've read it numerous times. I've read it so much that it's mine now. I can't give it back to him. I mean, I can go buy a copy for myself, but that won't have his words in it. I won't know what sentences he holds dear, how he defines himself in his unrequited love. I grip the knob again, ready to turn it and leave, but I manage to stand my ground. Look, I'm not here to make trouble. I just want my notebook back and you won't... I pause for a split second before completing the sentence. You won't have to see me again. Yes, this is the right thing to do. He is married. He is a father. He is a teacher. He is not a distraction. He is not fleeting. I don't understand what he is to me yet, but I know I can't afford to find out. Already, I'm in too deep. We've crossed too many lines. I'm going to drop the class, I nod, having made up my mind. Which is a relief because I obviously know nothing about poetry or writing in general, so if you'll just give me my notebook, I'll be on my way. Something flashes across his face that I don't understand, and he shifts in his chair again. The creak, the whisper of his clothes against the leather gets my heart whirring. I ignore it, though. He fishes out my notebook from the drawer and places it on the middle of his neatly organized desk. He uses his ring finger to slide it across the surface until it sits at the edge.
Take it.
With shaking legs, I walk farther into the room. I extend my hand and curl my fingers around my notebook. It's unusually hot to touch, as if he left his heat print on it. I pick it up, ready to tuck it away in my coat pocket, but his fingers snap around my wrist and halt my progress.
Not so fast, he says softly. Read it to me.
What? His fingers are so long that he can encircle my tiny wrist completely, and I'm shivering at his power. On top of that, he stands, towering over me. I have to crane my neck up to look at him.
The poem. Read it to me.
My eyes bug out of my skull. I must look like a cartoon because, holy shit, I can't. No. Thomas lets go of my hand, but I'm not relieved. Not when I can see how bunched up his body is, how coiled with restrained strength. I lick my dried lips and his eyes follow the action. They are charged with erotic electricity, and the silly hiccup jerks out of my throat as I draw in a breath. I slap my hand over my mouth in mortification and walk backward. For every inch I move away, he gains two. He is advancing on me, blocking out the meager light and the view of the snow through the windows. Clutching the notebook to my chest, I keep walking until I'm right back where I started, at the door, my spine pressing into the wood and the knob digging into the small of my back. Only this time Thomas is right there with me. He is so close that I can feel his fire and the flames dancing on his skin, but not close enough to touch and burn. Fire breather.
Don't make me repeat myself.
His stare is making me fall apart. What is happening? Unable to return it, I eye the patch of skin on his throat, which is directly in front of me. I can't. He goes still at my threadbare voice, but then his Adam's apple bobs, hitches, like his throat is inundated with swollen emotions.
You wrote it for me.
His thick whisper compels me to lift my gaze. My first reaction is to deny it, but I reject the idea as soon as it comes. Some weird intuition tells me he needs it, like he needed my orgasm, my desperation at the bar. Hypnotized, I nod. I did.
Then do it,
he bites out. My eyes go back and forth between his face and his throat, watching the odd intensity of his expression and the savage pounding of his pulse. It's difficult for him, this display.
but I'm guessing his emotions are too big to contain. He can't stop them from bleeding out, and I can't stop myself from absorbing it in my pores.